everyone, welcome to episode number 18 of MTG in 3D. I'm Pedro, and as always, I'm here with Liam.
Hi, everyone.
And as sometimes is the case, we're not here with Arthur because he had to work late tonight, but if he's available at some point, we'll just bring him in. Today, it's a special episode. We have a very special guest, and he's the right man for the job. We figured that with Cube starting to be mainstream when it comes to Magic, and with lots of new players to the format, and everyone has their own opinion, everyone has their way to see things, and we believe that it's a good idea to know where we came from, to better understand why we are where we are, and where should we go. It's an honor to have Cube Community Stalwart and one of the hosts of the Third Power podcast, Mr. Anthony Avitolo. Anthony,
hey guys.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's great to be talking to you guys. Through the magic of technology, I get to do a show about a bunch of Magic cards across the world, basically halfway across the world with a couple of people in real time, and it sounds like we're all in the same room. So thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to be here, and I hope that's a much more enthusiastic response than you guys usually hear from my co-host on my show. So take that, Usman.
Yeah, we don't hit too hard in case you want him on the show at some point.
That's all right. Then you can play compare and contrast. Like, and here we have Usman.
Hello, how are you? No, we're just kidding. We love
I'm
Usman.
Taking my shots early, Usman. I'm looking for you, baby.
he's been up late the night before recording this, writing some good material down. So he's got a few punchlines for you, Usman. So you be on the lookout for that. So we thought this Skype conversation would be a lot quicker than actually coming over to the States to see you. But who better to talk about the origins of Cube? As one of the people who's been doing it for a little while now, and I guess maybe you could start off talking about the origins of your cube, when you started cubing, and how you got where you are today, Anthony.
Oh, absolutely. Well, to kind of give you a little bit of prehistory on how I arrived and started cubing, back in the day when I was in graduate school, I came up with a format called Type 4, which is kind of gone in and out of the Magic spectrum. Some people play it, some people don't. Basically what it was a singleton format full of a bunch of cards that I never got a chance to play with, either because they were too expensive, they were no longer legal in formats or good enough in formats, so I came up with an infinite mana way to play it. Years later, I was living in Phoenix, Arizona, and a good friend of mine who now works for Wizards of the Coast, Adam Prozac, and I were playing a lot of Type 4, and we had our Type 4 stack was stolen out of a car. And so we were like, okay, well, what are we going to do now between rounds for casual play? And Adam was like, hey, you know what we should do? We should build a cube. And what we did is we went online, and there is a website basically back on up from, I think it's snazorama.com.
/magic/cube. Yeah,
right.
I think that's,
I believe that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can link it in the show notes.
Outstanding. And that's Brett Allen is the guy who runs the website or owns the website. I'm not sure if he's part of that original crew or not. But up in Canada, in Toronto, there were these guys, and what they did was they made this draft format where they put basically all the best cards into a box, shuffled them up, and drafted them, and they would hold tournaments, and they would do all this kind of stuff. I want to say this is, late 90s, early 2000s or so. And this was about, I guess, 2004, 2005, right around that time when I went through the trauma of getting some cards stolen. And so basically we just sat down, the two of us, and we went through all of my binders and said, okay, what are all the best cards that we see as we go through here? And we just started pulling cards out, pulling them out, putting them in piles, counting them up, and came out with basically my first cube. Kind of like Fisher-Price, my first radio, my first CD player. I guess my first MP3 player now, my first iPhone. Lord knows, my first smartphone, what they're going to have next.
I think it's a watch now.
My first Apple Watch. Right, right.
Yeah.
Right, and so you're right. My first neural net processor,
a learning computer,
and my first GPS, so I can find my way home from the park. So we put them together and started drafting, and this is, you know, we had all the best cards, and, you know, it's just like anything, we kept playing it, tuning it, trying different things, and then shortly after that, I want to say within 6 months or so, is when you started to see all of the peeking out of it into basically the, for lack of a better term, pop culture inside of Magic. Noah Weil wrote an article talking about it. Sam Gummersall wrote an article about it. And then the one of the big ones that got everybody's attention was Evan Irwin writing. He had, in 06, had an article about the Cube and then had an episode of the Magic Show about the Cube. And I want to say that was sometime in 07. In addition to Tom LaPilli, also now a former Wizards of the Coast R&D employee, made a big deal out of it and started talking a lot about it. So for me, I've been basically cube drafting since about 2004, 2005, right in that range. I think early 2005 is probably accurate, because I remember having it in place and playing it a lot, and it was one of the revisions. I don't know, it was maybe the third or fourth revision we had done by the time Cold Snap came out, to give you an idea of what sets were going on. Because okay. I remember playing it at Grand Prix Phoenix, which was original Ravnica Sealed with Cold Snap Draftade 2, and having guys like Ted Knutson and some of the Wizards people kind of coming by and checking it out and seeing what it was all about.
Before or after they used the Cube as a Magic Invitational format?
Oh, that was plenty before.
Okay.
That was a significant amount of time before. I'm not exactly sure when that happened. When they used that, and of course, you know, they did a thing too where they included a bunch of cards like Meddling Mage in a singleton environment.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. I guess I have this really hard to cast bear that we get to cross my fingers and hope it does. And I mean, I understand why they did that, certainly, because it's a nod to the Invitational winners, which, you know, that's a completely different rant about what they're doing with the artwork of former Invitational Cube winner, former Invitational winners cards. But
come
you know,
on,
we can talk about that or not.
We all know that Chris Piccola is a middle-aged African lady. Come on. Everybody
I know, that
knows
was by
that.
Far the most effective. I mean, you know, fine, you know, Shadow Mage Infiltrator, ooh, he's got a thing down on his face. Maybe it does look like Finkel, we don't know. But to change gender, come on. At least give it the same gender, good lord. So, this was significantly before, I want to say a pre, you know, when we were cubing, predates it by at least a year or two. As we're doing this, yeah, that was 2007, I believe, because that was the one that Tiago Chan won, which later became
Snapcaster Mage.
So this is about 2+ years before that. So to give you an idea on that. And then it was just one of those things where we kept playing, kept doing it. And at the time, there wasn't really a centralized point for information. It was kind of a few of us had cubes. Tom LaPilli and I did a lot of communication as far as what cards to include and what cards not. And he was one of the first writers to go ahead and really just start writing about it. It was kind of his mission that he was going to get hired by Wizards of the Coast and show his ability by writing about designing this format, you know, designing the format, but working with the format and his reasoning for cards. And kind of he had his own blog and his own website where he talked a lot about that, which later turned into, you know, article series on Star City and moved on from there. So he was probably the first to really popularize it as far as article writing, more than, hey, by the way, there's this thing called Cube, you should try it. And then you don't hear another thing from it for another 6 months. And then, hey, remember that thing this other guy talked about called Cube? I tried it and it was fantastic. You should try it too. You know, and that's basically all Cube was for a while until right about that time, right about 2007, Magic Invitational, that's when it really started to get some attention and starting to pick up steam. And then I would think the next really big tick up is when they started featuring it on Magic Online.
Yeah, definitely. I remember hearing about Q being played in the Invitational, but I never thought again about it until probably around the time Wizards launched their online cube.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people that started around that time as well.
Right. Because it gave all these people a chance to, you know, let's be honest, you know, cubing in real life is not the easiest thing to do because you have to find, you know, for me, I always prefer drafting. Drafting for me is the most pure form of it. You can certainly play other formats, but if you're drafting, you always want at least, you know, four people or so. Two people's fine, whatever. But four, six, eight gets better the deeper you go in that direction. So not only do you have to find people who have a cube, who then have time, who then find at least three other people who have time and interest, and then getting everybody in the same place to commit multiple hours into it. It sounds much more daunting when you put it into all those component pieces, as opposed to Magic Online. Hey, I'm playing Magic Online. I have someone supplying the other players. I have someone supplying the cards, and I have it available 24 hours a day to you whenever you decide you'd like to do it. So,
and I want to draft vampires.
Wait.
Well, we don't want to draw vampires. But
I'm sorry. Are we talking Innistrad? Wait, what?
It was a small jab at the recent iteration of the Magic Online Cube.
Oh no, I understand. I think small is maybe a bit understated. Probably a significant jab.
No, not really. It's just playful banter. We hold hope that one day we may get a preview card for a new set, and we don't want to. Please?
Give us a vampire. There we go. That would be the honor, right?
I mean, if it's cube playable, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's got two power and it's one mana and it doesn't have a huge drawback, yeah, in. Let's go. Let's do it. So for me, that's the time it really started to take off, was right there when people had access to it. And all of a sudden, people's eyes were opened, and I hear from so many people, like, is this what you were talking about all this time? Yes. Is this that box you carried around all that time? Yes. Is this the thing that I always saw? Yes, it's the same thing. Thank you. like the heavens parted and the sunlight shone down on the people, and they said cube was good. You know, and finally everybody was interested, and we got this renaissance in cubing, and people, you know, dipping their toes and jumping into the pool, as it were, and really kind of being more aware and in the forefront of Magic. Now, you know, now it's very rare that I go anywhere. You know, I used to be the guy with the cube. Now I'm one of, you know, there's,
yeah,
I go to
a
standard event, there's like seven or eight of them, you know, people who have them. So now I'm just, you know, the guy with the cube podcast, or the guy with the cube that's shiny. You know, it's there's more descriptors needed now to describe me.
Interestingly, you're talking about cubes being shiny, because that's some of the things that once you start looking for cube content. When I started, I just started scouring all the internet for everything. I found your podcast and Granny's podcast, your articles, Parnell's articles, Usman's articles, and there was apparently it's a time-honored tradition to try to pimp your cube, try to get foil versions, try to get foreign versions. Where did that came from, actually?
Well, okay, so I had a great conversation with somebody about this just yesterday. I was speaking to, I was playing in a standard tournament for a Black Lotus, which sounds absurd, I know. And I was playing with a younger gentleman who probably was born after I started playing Magic, if I had to make my guess. And I played, you know, my Japanese Apocalypse Caves of Koilos. And he was just like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like, where did you get that? And I had to tell him, I said, you know, I don't know. I was just playing this version when it was standard legal, however many years ago. I've had it just forever. And he made a very salient point to me. And this is absolutely true. And I'll just say it and let you guys respond to it. Magic is really just a fashion show. Think about the playmats. Think about the sleeves. Think about the, especially when you come to eternal formats, right? Vintage legacy people. Vintage is, I would say if I had to pinpoint where it started, it's from vintage people. Vintage has always been about, I mean, come on, the primary things in vintage are called jewelry, right?
I mean, it is an interesting point that you bring up, because, you know, I think it's the same with EDH decks, and as you say, Eternal, and with EDH and Commander, and with Cube, there is almost the element that what you're building is an extension of your personality and your preferences and your group preferences, and you try and personalize it. You know, you add your altered cards, your foil cards, and you sort of get a sense of attachment to what's in there.
Absolutely.
I think it's a natural thing over time. You want to try and accrue a bit more, you know, something right. that you perceive to be a bit more unique and special.
Absolutely. And, you know, to go along with that, too, now, whether this is conscious or subconscious, or maybe it's a little mix of both, when you're talking about casual formats, when you're talking about eternal formats, what's the thing that they all have in common? Is that the cards you buy or the cards you trade for or the cards you own will always be in vogue. Unlike standard, unlike extended, totally. The cards never go, don't spoil. They don't go bad like eggs, right? Yeah. You always have them and they're always going to be good. You know, your vintage deck, the cards for your vintage deck are always going to be, you know, with the exception of, you know, bannings and things like that, are always going to be able to play it, even more so in the casual formats, right? Since, you know, when do cards get banned in casual formats with the exception of, you know, some of the commander things that they've had to adjust? But, like, you know, cards don't get banned in Cube. When was the last time, you know, cards don't get banned in kitchen tables necessarily? Like,
we can talk about this later, and we will, but we can argue that some cards are de facto banned in Cube.
Sure, we can talk a little bit about that.
Before we go that, I want to you talked about Magic being a fashion show. Liam talked about cards you play with being an extension of your personality. On one hand, I mean, the other week I just got myself a foil Rofellos that I chased for 3 years or something.
Nice.
And I felt really pleased with that, and I like looking at my Cube cards and watch them all shine. But in the other hand, I'm not going to talk about financial stuff, but there are two things. One is, this happens with all the subcultures. I fear that sometimes people want to be different from the mainstream, so they all try to be different from the mainstream in the same way.
Right, and then therefore wind up being exactly the same and defeating the purpose to begin with.
Exactly.
It reminds me of that on South Park. It's and there's the goth kids, and they say, oh, you have to dress in black so you can be different from all the conformists.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And the other thing is, lots of people are experimenting with Cube and are new to Cube and they want to build their own cubes. And there's an equilibrium point that we have to try to reach between, yes, look at all these cards and all the history behind them, and, okay, if you want to start playing this format, you only have to get black-bordered, Japanese-signed and altered cards. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So how do we come to terms with this? I mean, in one hand, you are talking about Cube, you wanting your Cube to be a living museum of Magic history. But on the other hand, what type of message do we want to show to everyone that's new to the format?
That's a great question. So certainly, you know, for me, what cards I include and perhaps what versions I include, but more so the cards themselves are what I consider to be the history museum. You know, whereas I'd like to get, you know, the miscut, diagonal, crimped, Spanish foil Maloku that makes 2/2s. That's just one of those things that it's like, well, it's still a part of history because, you know, this is a pretty big goof up. But on the other hand, I'm pretty cool for having this, right? And then on the third hand, if I ever really get tired of Magic, I can, you know, help use this for a car payment, you know, and move on that way. So that there's a little bit of each. But for me, the message I like to send forward about to new cubers that I like for them to – most of my cards are in English, not all, but I'm certainly always willing to help people out and talk about it. The greatest day of my life was when – and by greatest day of my life, I mean at that moment was the greatest day of my life for the 2 hours or so that I was happy about this – was when they showed the From the Vault Annihilation.
Yes.
And it had an English foil Cataclysm. Because I cannot tell you how many times I've had to explain what that card does to people. And the only one I had was a Korean one. Like, well, you see, you do this.
And then
they don't get to do this. No, they don't get to keep planeswalkers. So they have to pick one. Yeah, they pick one. And do you sack them all at the same time? Well, you got to. Oh, God. And to the point where I was like looking for an English one to trade for again. I couldn't find one, and then they're like, "Hey, we're saved by this."
So you haven't cut your Korean miscut humility yet, then?
Humility is a card that I will stay. I don't care if it's, you know, I'm all for playing great decks. It is a card I will stay away from. I just have no interest. You know, it's one of those things. It's just agonizing.
It is an
agonizing rule. So I, you know, try to keep away from stuff like that, even though they might be good. I try to keep away from that a little bit, for sure.
I think the whole history museum aspect is really nice. So I've just had my future brother-in-law, in fact, has recently taken up cards again, and he's been, you know, interested to see what the cube is, having heard a bit about it online. You know, now it is something that is discussed a bit more regularly than, say, a decade ago.
Sure.
So we got the cube and a few months back, and you see cards like Psychotog and, you know, Necropotence and the like to that, and you sort of, well, it comes to you and says, well, why is this good? You know, and those are sort of cards that and Dark Confidence and things like that. That's not immediately apparent to a new player, but, you know, not only do you get to impart the history that's associated with the cards when they're great in standard, but also to explain the different mechanics. It is, as you say, a museum, and it's a really nice facet to have from a collection.
Right, and the great thing about this kind of museum is that you get to touch it. You get to touch things. You don't get your hand slapped by a security guard when you try to, you know, reveal the top card of your library for Dark Confidant. It takes them back. You know. You actually get to play with them, interact with them, and that's a really nice thing about it when introducing to new Magic players, like my young friend who made the fashion show comment, was that there is a very good chance that he has never played with or against a Flame Tongue Khabu in his life.
Oh, sure.
Have never even seen that card before, you know?
Nope. Yeah. And I mean, so, if you play Commander, it's probably not going to be seen too much. And
right, exactly. Or, you know, for the most part, a lot of new Magic players seem to kind of jump right into FNM right away. So, you know, they mostly see whatever is standard legal, and once in a while they might show up on a Modern Night or, you know, they just happen to stop by on Legacy Night. And, oh, my God, look at those expensive cards, you know, but they don't really get a chance to interact with them. So it's kind of this nice, the cube is this really nice, for me, this really nice equilibrium of let's introduce the new people to some old cards and let them play with them both, you know, with and against the cards that they may be familiar with. And for the old people, like myself, who have these great memories attached to these old cards, to get to play with them again in a format where they're still relevant and get a chance to experience and play with the new stuff. So it's kind of a two-way street. That the old gets to interact with the new gets to interact with the old, not only card-wise, but player-wise as well. That's something for me that is really special and could be really easy to miss because, you know, I got to tell you, as I continue to build this modern cube, you know, this modern face cube, unless you're eliminating power and stuff like that, you know, compared to unpowered, it's not that far off. There's a lot of, I mean, the modern age of Magic, this, if you want to draw the line at 8th edition and forward, basically, is really powerful.
Particularly in creatures, we've noticed before. If you look at the amount of sort of creatures in white that you run with the old border, they're next to nil at this point.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's like the spells were better back then, but the creatures are way better now because we've moved away from, you know, in general, we've moved away from having the availability of uninteractive spell-based combo decks into creatures punching each other in the face, you know, is kind of where they want to go. And it's nice to have all of those in the same spot. And for me, that's one of the things I really get pleasure out of is watching people do that. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, and, you know, this is just from my experience. I've been playing since, hold on, 1997? So, approaching 20 years. My first pack of cards was a pack of alliances.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I'd seen it before. Basically, I lived in an honors dorm where I would be, you know, having the usual, you know, what someone would consider the typical college experience of trying to pass out while the room is spinning. And the people across the hall are up at 3 a.m. screaming that your white knight can't block my black knight because he's got protection from black and or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, God, be quiet. The room is spinning. I don't need to hear you argue about this. So I kind of missed out on the beginning of Magic, but then hopped in around 97 when I was playing the original Star Wars TCG, the old Decipher one. And because I like the properties associated with it, and I bought a pack of Magic cards, and the big card back then was Balduvian Horde, right? It was, you know, it's like this big card. And I opened a pack of cards, and I'm like, Balduvian Horde. I'm like, this is easy. I'm in. And that was it. So for me, like when I go through old cards, and you guys may experience this too. You know, when you first started playing, when you first started drafting, you find like piles of cards like in your stuff, right? Or you're looking through someone's collection, and you pass these cards, and you're like, and you pass a card that was great, and you have that feeling kind of like in your gut or in your mind or in your heart, and you're like, oh, this card's awesome. And then you look at it through today's lens, and you go, this card's not that good. Nowadays, I mean, if they printed this now, it would be pretty.
I don't have that experience. The first pack I ever opened was a 7th edition pack, and
I'm so sorry. Oh.
I opened Trained Orc.
Unless you open a foil Stormcry, then you saw it.
Foil Birds of Paradise is a nice one there too, but foil Goblin Matrix.
A lot of the foils are pretty decent.
But the artwork is so bad. Oh, I'm so sorry.
But it depends. It depends on the card. I like some 7th edition foil cards.
Oh, well, the 7th edition foil cards are certainly have their own look to them. But in general...
I understand.
I mean, going back to my earliest packs, I believe was in and around the time of the first Portal set. The second Portal set, and we were mixing up with some sort of the standard set packs as well, other than the starter ones. And I remember opening a Portal Bish of some kind and opening something like a Djinn of the Lamp. I think it was a 5/6 flyer for about 7 mana.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this time you get super happy about it. And of course, you know, I built a deck at the time based around just counterspelling people's lands because we all thought that was okay. because basically we didn't know the rules. You know, no, unfortunately, it's not something I can repeat in the cube nowadays. But yeah, it's nice to have the nostalgia of opening something exciting in every pack, and you know, being able to work it into a deck and make whatever you like. And it's a great experience for new cubers, I think. Well, new players in general.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that feeling when you invite people that are relatively new players and you see their eyes starting to shine.
Yeah.
You know, I've had someone drafting my cube that he was playing for about a year and he built a very cool draft with Vindicate and stuff like that. And he looked at me and said, why can't I play with those cards? Why are they not in standard? They used to be, you know, or that feeling when I used to run my copy of Rofellos used to be in German. Mm-hmm. And people would just ask me, what does this do? And then I showed them the Oracle text, and they opened their eyes a lot and said, okay, I have to play this.
Yeah, it's half history and half best of album.
Yeah.
I think it's best of right.
And it's a format, too, where you can have that moment of enlightenment, that moment of discovery, that kind of something we all had when we first started playing Magic, right? You open a new pack of cards, you smell them first because they have that new Magic card smell, you know, and you get to see these new things. It's what, you know, pre-releases were. I remember at the Invasion pre-release, you know, this is before spoilers all the time and all this kind of stuff. You didn't know. They didn't release the card list until the weekend, the Monday after the pre-release was done.
Yeah, I remember those days as well.
And all I remember is that people turning their cards sideways because it was first time to split cards.
Yes.
And people were just, I mean, people were like ready to like hit themselves over the head with hammers. I mean, it was unbelievable the reaction people were having. Just like, oh my god, this is two cards in one. Like, and you know, you'd be drafting with somebody or playing against somebody, and all of a sudden they draw a card, and then their head goes like sideways, like a cat or a dog who's looking at food. You know, it's like, and you're like, oh, they drew a split card. You know,
across the table, not having seen them, going, what's wrong with them? They're having some kind of seizure. I mean, exactly. Imagine if you'd gone to Innistrad draft cold.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, what's going on? Is this a misprint? I mean, it's, I know some people are really fundamentally opposed to the DFCs, but I really like them, so.
I think most people have gotten over them. There was a significant outcry. Well, yeah, you know, nobody likes to have their cheese moved, right? You know, nobody likes to have things change, and so whenever something new comes out, it's a new border, let's riot! It's a two-sided card, we riot! It's a new font and a hologram on the bottom. We're going to riot again. You know, whatever it is. And it's always fine. There's a bunch of very smart people working on this. And, you know, they got it. You know, Mythic Rares, we riot. You know, like.
Serum Visions in Modern Masters. Oh, wait.
Right. No, sir, right. Modern Masters packs are only worth $10 a piece EV. We riot. You know. So, you know, there's always something to complain about. And I, you know, to go back to the moment of discovery point, that's not only, you know, let's kind of rewind it all the way back to, how do you reconcile the, you know, diagonal crimped foil, foreign misprint, miscut. How do you reconcile that with the history and the new playing? Well, the first time people open, you know, see cards and open packs, there's that moment of discovery of, wow, look at this card. Wow, this is a new card. And then there's the extra layer of that who people who have seen cards before probably haven't seen that version of the card. So there's another whole layer of discovery of, wow, I am holding some, you know, I have not seen something like this before. So it keeps adding extra layers of wide-eyedness, I guess, for a level. Because I got to admit, I mean, this is going to sound, you know, for the, I don't want to sound stupid or conceited or anything, but there are times when I'll draft my own cube and I'll open a pack and look at it and go, man, this is really nice. Like, this is really cool, you know?
I
start
relate.
Looking around the room, like, does anybody have a gun or a knife? Like, I gotta locate all the exits to make sure I can get out of here, you know? So, there's multiple reasons for that. And it, you know, it all kind of mixes together for that cube experience, you know?
There's a sort of charming simplicity to it all. You take the best cards, you put them in a box, you draft them.
Right.
Yeah,
what would it be like if you put all the best cards in Magic in the same spot and drafted them?
Yeah, I mean, that's when you break it down, that's how things originated. But, you know, over the course of time, and I think this really happened, rowing the boat a bit back into your earlier points, the explosion of Magic and, Cube into the public consciousness with, I want to say it was sort of predating the online cubes and the sort of official cube support and everything, but into, as Cube came a bit more mainstream, there's been a lot of divergence of how people construct cubes, and I know Pedro actually had a lot of points to talk about with this and the way people describe cubes, and actually to lend context, because it's not as simple as it once was with actual design.
No, we can just start by along the years, how popular were themed cubes? Okay, I know for instance that when Eric Klug built his common uncommon cube, that was a sort of a big deal at the time, because if I recall correctly, nobody had done it.
Right, and so, if they have, they didn't talk about it or it wasn't a big deal, you know.
Yeah, along the times, what was the prevalence of people building and talking about their putting their own twist in the format?
Yeah, basically, what for the longest time, the biggest division among cube drafters were powered, unpowered.
Yeah.
That was it. That was, you know, for a long time, that's what it was, you know. Cube meant, you know, when you say cube, it meant, okay, we're going to have this, all the best cards in Magic. And basically the only division was, does it have power or does it not have power? And that's really all the only description it was. And it was like that for a long time. As people, I guess, you know, as, you know, looked for variation, looked for ways. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, while Eric's common uncommon cube is great, and he's always the one, whenever people ask about that format, I always direct them to his cube and his writings, and because his cube is fabulous and it plays so well. But, you know, there's got to be a root in the financial side of it. How do I build my own cube without having to buy power, right? How do I build my cube without having to get dual lands? You know, because back in the day, 10 bucks a piece, man, that's like 100 bucks for 10 dual lands. That might be pretty steep for somebody, you know?
Yeah, it does sound like a lot.
Right, it does. I mean, you know, and, you know, undergrounds were up to like 20 or 25. What magic card is, what do you want me to do next is buy power? $25? What do you want me to do? Spend like 80, 90 bucks and get a Mox? Come on.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's ridiculous. And if you go back even further, why? I can't believe I got this stupid rare in the packet where the works just like a land. It's the same thing. This is stupid. Give me a Shivan Dragon for it, please.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think part of it, like I said, mostly was powered on power. That was the big division. I think the next division of that, you know, started to be the rarity levels, right? So we had the common uncommon cube, and then we got the all commons cube. Adam Staborski.
Yeah.
Famously has a very good and well kept and well maintained, all common cube. So those are basically the first row of divisions. Now, since then, people have gotten pretty creative and kind of gone along those different paths. And now you start to see the theme cubes, right? So you see things like
the Desert
Servitor cube. The what?
The Desert Cube.
Desert Cube. I'm not familiar with the
okay,
Desert Cube.
Okay, we linked it previously in a few months ago.
Oh, okay.
It's, you have to draft your basic lands. It's sort of this flavor setting where you're in a desert and some kind of futuristic dystopia, and someone tried to recreate that environment through a cube draft, and you have to draft your basics. There are no basics. You have to draft them. And the you have like 30 Kindles in the draft in the draft pool, you know.
If you don't draft basics, do you get deserts instead?
No, but you have like 3 or 4 deserts in the list. I don't. We can link it again.
Yeah, I'm kind of taking a look at it here a little bit as you guys are talking about it. Right, exactly. So and people started, you know, having different forms of these cubes, right? But the one thing for me that I always that always stayed consistent until somewhat recently is that singleton rule. You know, that was always for me the big thing about a cube was I was always okay with, you know, at least from a language standpoint, I was always okay with cube doing different things, right? We have a Mirror Servitor cube.
Yeah, here's I was going to mention that cube. One. That's the one that comes to mind, yeah.
Yeah, Mirror Servitor Cube is actually a lot of fun.
Yeah,
we
very,
have
very, very cool.
Mono Blue Cube. I've played a multicolor cube where every single card is multicolored.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun. There's been...
The Combo Cube and the Artifact
combo
cube.
Right, exactly. And these all these things. But, you know, the one thing that they that kind of keeps them all the same, while they may have little rules or whatever, to little extra rules, like the Combo Cube uses all rainbow lands, you know. Get however many, just to make it work. The one thing that was always consistent between all of them was that singleton rule. That was the one thing, you know, when you heard the word cube, it meant it was a, you know, someone chose the cards that went in, there was one of each one, and, you know, and you were going to play a limited environment with them. And, you know, we've started to see as the, you know, the fibers on the carpet get stretched further and, you know, on the tapestry get stretched further and further, you're starting to see different things of that. Now, while I do think, for example, someone has what they call an Innistrad Draft Cube.
Oh, yeah, you know, thank you. I was going to bring that up.
It's like 4 of every common, 3 of every uncommon, 2 of each rare, 1 of each mythic.
Is it?
And to try to simulate the draft
no,
format.
No, but that's the point, because I've... If you hear the words Ravnica Cube, it can mean one of multiple things. What does it mean? Does it mean that you just, you're in a singleton setting and you just pick your cards from the Ravnica block? And which Ravnica block? The original one, the second one, or both? Mm-hmm. Or are you building a draft simulator where you're trying to recreate the experience of drafting that set?
Right.
Or, are you just trying to recreate the general gameplay and themes in broad sense, and you include cards from other sets that fit thematically in the cube?
Right. Now, see, for me, I hear Ravnica Cube, and my mind immediately goes to Singleton, one of each card, all the best cards from the setting of Ravnica.
Yes.
And that's the, you know, how things, you know, once again, you know, me being the old guy and getting off my lawn, that's how things, I think, the way things should be. Like, our words should have some specific meanings to them. Well, it doesn't need to be, you know, cube certainly, you know, let me start saying language changes, right? Words evolve over time and mean different things. Yeah. However, they still start from a place, and it's nice when they're the same thing. Especially, I consider cube in a Magic context to be a proper noun. So whenever you see my writings, whenever
you capitalize
I talk about
it,
I capitalize it. Yes. That's right. And the reason why I do that is to try to keep it as its own specific thing. And by specific, I basically just mean what I said earlier, that it's singleton, that it's a limited format, you know, and at that point, and that it, with the cards that are in it fit the theme of what its own title is. For example, if it's a mere servitor cube, I hear that and I think there's going to be something to do with Mere Servitor. So it's going to be cards that interact with Mere Servitor, and there's going to be one of each of them, and we're going to draft it. And that's all I really need to know at that point, you know?
The, one thing that I think, I really think we should make a disclaimer at this point, at least in my perspective, and I know you are going to agree with me, that's not to say that all these different variations and ways for people to show their creativity, that they don't have their place in Magic gameplay. I think you agree with this, right?
Of course. I mean, people need to play what makes them happy, and I will never criticize, you know, anyone, judge people harshly because they want to play with cards they want to play.
Yeah.
I mean, Magic is supposed to be fun. I mean, you know, once again, relating to my Lotus Tournament experience, had a trade in place for someone to meet him after round two. However, he lost round one and two and, you know, turned into Lot's wife and left, you know, because he was so salty. And
okay.
And, you know,
great.
And so, so then he, you know, he left and it's just like, well, I'm doing this for fun. You know, even when I got eliminated from the tournament, even though it was, you know, for some of the most, you know, mana issues or whatever, sure, it's Magic, but I still had fun. I'm still playing a game. I'm not going to get on someone's case for building, you know, a custom draft format that has this and has this and has this or whatever. That being said, it's still, I would still like cube to mean something specific, but I certainly don't begrudge anybody from doing anything they want with their Magic cards. I mean, put them in the spokes of your, you know, of your square wheeled bicycle and call that, you know, cube riding or something. I don't know. You know, whatever you do with it, and that's fine. You know, you guys can have a race to the end of the driveway, and that's your cubing or whatever. You know, I don't, whatever you want to do with it is fine, and I dig that, and I'm glad the reason those people are the reason why Magic is still around and why all of us get to continue to enjoy it is because people can play and buy cards. You know,
I think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned about the sort of linguistic aspect of words evolving, because whether or not we consider a cube or a different variety of cube, that word is now what is in the public, if you want to use that word, consciousness. So sure. As Pedro used the example of the Ravnica Cube, that could be a singleton format, that could be a draft sort of simulation, it could be a sort of weird thematic thing with, you know, both sets or whatever you like. Regardless of what you consider it, people are going to say we're going to refer to that as cube. So really the point of differentiation comes when you want to actually compare and contrast different people's environments. If you describe it as cube, an analogy would be if I go to Starbucks or, you know, other brands may be available, and I ask for a tall soy skinny vanilla latte with cinnamon, or I go and I ask for coffee. You know, so when you're just linguistically, it's more simple to say cube than to say, oh, well, I have all these caveats. I have this many cards. I have powered and unpowered. I have you because of this and this. I squadron pick this and this. I do a land draft. I have these, you know, it gets really complex, really, really fast.
All my creatures are rebels.
Yeah, all my white creatures are rebels. You know, black aggro enabled, black aggro disabled, no sword for Jeep. You know, it gets really complex. And I think it's an inevitability that people just come to one term on this stuff. And then that is just a reflection of where we are at with so many different variants on what is essentially, rather than being the singleton format, just become a sort of custom draft thing. But I do agree that I always do think of Q as being a singleton environment. You know, I'm still in that mindset.
Absolutely. And, you know, for me, and I like your point about the being able to kind of put them next to each other. So what is, you know, from what I see, if Facebook has taught me anything, you ready for this? If Facebook has taught me anything, it's that there's one thing, if Facebook and David Letterman and everybody, if there's one thing that people love, it's lists. People love top 8 lists, top 10 lists, top 25 lists, top 100 albums of all time, top, you know, whatever it is. You know, people love that kind of stuff. And the reason why is that people love to compare things to each other, compare and contrast things to each other. I mean, we do it, you know, all the time, right? It's a human survival instinct. You know, whatever it might be, that's kind of just one of those things we always do. We like to compare. And by having at least a unified starting point for language of saying cube and me having that mean a couple of things, then from there we can say, so that's the first thing we should say, right? Is here, I have a cube. All right. Well, what is it about it that, because, you know, what people are really asking most of the time when they ask about your cube is they're asking, how is it different from the traditional sense, right? How is it different than whatever you say? Oh, well, it's, you know, powered. Okay. Well, that gives me a little more information. And, you know, there's a heavy artifact theme. Okay. You know what I mean? And you can then start, you know, mining for more information, or, you know, then you can kind of make it as complex as you want down in there, right? It's the decision tree, right? So at the top, if you'll envision the word cube, and then spawning off a cube are, you know, like the lines, you know, like a graphic organizer, right? And it says, you know, powered, unpowered, and then spawning off of those are lines that connect to different things. And there's all these branches, you know, now we're getting to the point where there's all these separate branches, you know, of complexity as going down. But when you trace them all back up, they all go back to the word cube. And that's what I'd really like to have. And, you know, for me, if I built, let's say a cube that had multiples or whatever, I mean, I would probably say it's like a cube or it's based off a cube, but it has these things, right? Here's how it's going to differ from the thing that you know. And I would just want that word that people know to have it as a launching off point for then understanding what comes after.
A basic set of rules from which to depart.
Correct.
Yeah.
That, for me, that makes things very easy, clear, and easy to put in a list, right? Like, you know, I'd probably go out with Mere Servitor Cube for a night, but yeah, I would probably date Mono Blue Cube, you know, it's kind of those things where you can put them in line. But Power Cube, that's the one I want to bring home to Mama, you know?
Okay. The example you gave me earlier, Padre, where someone said, I'm building my cube section, my multicolor gold section, and what does everyone's black white decks look like?
Oh yeah,
I
was going. Thanks for reminding me. It's
carry on.
Building on what Anthony is saying, the main point for me is, I mean, yes, words evolve, and I mean, as it's as human to repurpose words as it is to build lists. Okay, but I feel like we still need to be able to understand each other. And the example that Liam is just talking about. There was some thread on Reddit, on the MTG Cube Reddit, and people were asking, how do you build your white-black multicolored section? What types of decks are usually built in white and black in your cube? Some people said, okay, sometimes it's an aggro deck, sometimes it's more controlish deck. And some people said, cleric tribal.
That's awesome.
And with no further context. I said, okay, so how is cleric tribal supported in the cube? So I looked at the list. And so that person's almost entire black section was comprised of multiple copies of Shadowborn Apostle.
So there you go.
Okay. And I said, okay, so how does it help me for you to tell me without further context, my black white decks are cleric tribal? someone was discussing, I believe it was Talrand Sky Summoner or something.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said, no, it was very bad in my cube. And then another person said that, it's very good in my cube and I support the blue-red spells matter theme.
Sure.
And the person said, okay, no, but I also support it and it's very bad in my cube. And then you go look at that second person's cube list and it's modern only with 40 or 50 cards banned. With the power level intentionally nerfed and with multiple copies of multiple cards. Which is fine, if that's what you want to do. Okay?
But, yeah, right. Your point is really, the comparison is not self-evident.
It doesn't really help me if you tell me this was bad in my cube. So why?
Right.
Oh, because I don't run planeswalkers and all my removal is sorcery speed. Okay, but the onus to provide the context is on you. It's not on me.
Right, right. And you'll see this a lot. I'm glad you're bringing this up because you see this a lot in online discussions. This is an infamous MTG Salvation conversation inflamer, for lack of a better term, is that someone asks, hey, which of these cards is better, X or Y?
Oh,
and everybody says, card X is better, card X is better, card X is better. And then one person is like, you guys are all crazy. Card Y is better. And it's like, well, why? It's like, oh, it's just been the grade or whatever. But then they don't provide any context at all. And what you realize is that they're talking about, let's say they're talking about the Talrand Sky Summoner. But what they didn't tell you is that their cube is an all creature. It's an all creature cube.
Ah, okay.
You know, and it's like, well, no kidding why it's not any good in your context or whatever.
Yeah.
Or someone's like, or, you know, a great example of this is Gorilla Shaman. In powered versus unpowered.
Yeah.
This for a small cube, let's say a 360 or a 180 powered with Gorilla Shaman. Mm-hmm. Gorilla Shaman is not very good in unpowered cubes because it does not have a huge amount of targets. But if you just try to discuss the card Gorilla Shaman and provide no context whatsoever, you can see where you could, you know, there's going to be very, you know, people on one side vehemently disagreeing with people on the other side as far as whether it's useful or not, and no one's ever said in unpowered, in powered, in my cube that has no artifacts, in my cube that's an artifact themed cube, or whatever it might be, you know. There's always needs to be some sort of context to then relate back to what the word cube means.
And I tried to do this with one of my favorites, Mental Misstep, and I say, well, you know, there's the caveat that my cube is reasonably semi-powered. You know, I emit some of the fast mana, but my curve's quite low. So, you know, so there's that caveat. Maybe other people won't find it good. It's probably pretty OP in the 50 Shadowborn Apostle cube, I don't know.
right, but, or the one-drop cube, right.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's useful to try and provide at least some kind of context, unless you think this thing is sort of universally useful.
Exactly. And the context is only useful if we have a term from where we could have a launching off point of saying, here's cube, here's the basic things of what it means. Now provide me some context of specificity.
Go back to your comments earlier on Meddling Mage. You know, that in a regular cube, in a singleton cube is, you know, not of a huge import or use, but if you were to run a cube with sufficient multiples, for example, you know, the aggro decks with multiple grave crawlers or whatever you might have, that becomes maybe more useful. So without that context, you couldn't have a meaningful discussion on it.
Right, but, you know, you can't have that unless there is some information provided.
Exactly.
You know, we're seeing, and, you know, you guys can feel free to keep this in or take it out as you deem fit. But right now here, I don't know how much you guys keep up on what's happening here in the States, but recently there's been lots of civil unrest in Baltimore.
Yes, I'm aware of all that.
I've heard an awesome story that a mother went and grabbed her child, quote-unquote, a young man, and she just grabbed him by the ear and said, you're going home, and I found that awesome.
Right. Well, and it was even beyond that, you know, we can talk about the social implications of that, you know, she pulled him aside and basically was cursing him out and beating him the entire time for being involved in violence. And you go, huh, well, maybe that starts at home, being that you're dragging him out and beating him while you're doing this. You're like, go, mom, but maybe we can get some context on where this comes from. One of the big things that's come out of that, and something I actually talked about on social media and wanted people to explain to me, is that at least here in the States, the word thug has now become a racist term.
I wasn't aware of that, really.
Right. This is one of those things that what's happening is a lot of the conservative media, like I said, you know, has turned towards, instead of the, you know, there's lots of term use of the word thug in lieu of, a lot of people feel that it's in lieu of saying a racial term describe black people. So there is some change of context there, that this word is being used as something else, as a acceptable word, instead of saying something more offensive. So now this word is becoming a taboo word. Right. It's right. It's the, whatever I have assumed and prescribed a different meaning to it, or people are perceiving a different meaning from it. Where for me, you know, when I think of the word thug, I think of, you know, the old, you know, the assassins from, you know, India, you know, the old Hindu assassins, the thuggies, you know, through like Indiana Jones, you know, they were the thuggies. That was the name of the gang, you know, they were thugs. Or the, you know, the mobs and the, you know, the mob bosses who had their heavies, right? They're guys who used to go out and break
their
legs.
They're the thugs.
They're the thugs, right? Guys, they're the muscle, right? But then, I mean, you have thugs in magic too, right? You know, they're strong arm thug, right?
Yeah.
So these are, you know, they're the heavies. But now that term has evolved into something else, having a different context on it, and I'm having trouble with that whole thing, because it's like, well, it always meant this, but now we're changing it to something else, and to try to keep up on the language is even, you know, and they said, well, the president used it in one of his speeches, and, you know, he's, as you know, a man of the darker complexion as well. And they're saying, well, how can it be racist if he's using it? You know, and so there's a lot of this language talk that's going on.
I mean,
and that was very acute to me as I think of my crusades about the Cube language. I was like, huh, interesting.
Look no further than the usage of the word gay, right?
Oh, correct. Absolutely. It's certainly gone through at least, what, 3 or 4 different meanings now.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, you know, you think about the Flintstones, you know, the very end of the Flintstones is, we'll have a gay old time.
Yeah.
Gay means happy, you know?
Yeah.
You all the, you know, gaily walk down the street, you know, old, folk songs and things like that, you know, that's gaiety. I mean, that's where it comes from, you know, and means happy or whatever. And then it turned into a term, you know, to describe homosexuality, and then kind of the modern gamer thing, it now means stupid or dumb or, you know, whatever they want to describe it.
That's,
and you have to kind of go, whoa,
that's
wait a
bit stupid, yeah.
And it's like, you know, let's figure out what it is we're actually saying here. Because, if, you know, you don't want to step on people's toes, and language does evolve. However, maybe language doesn't need to evolve and shouldn't evolve sometimes. And, you know, maybe that's one of those examples.
I mean, it should evolve. It should evolve if you're – I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding is that some communities repurpose some words that used to be slurs and try to repurpose the word to give it a more positive light.
Yeah,
right.
That certainly happens.
In those types of cases, I'm all for words changing meanings.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
but going towards the positive side of the spectrum, I'm all for it.
But before we go too much off topic on this,
surprisingly, going on a tangent with me on the podcast. Oh my gosh,
that's probably unheard of.
Sorry.
Before we go too far, and we're not even remotely suggesting that some these types of things that are complex and they need to be discussed collectively as a society are remotely comparable to the usage of the word cube in Magic the Gathering context.
But Pedro, it's a major societal issue.
I'm gonna call it, instead of calling someone a square, I'm gonna call him a cube and then get beat up by a street gang. A gang of somebody, you know.
That just means that people need to know their mathematics better, but I'm really digressing.
Dude, it's a compliment. Or maybe it's not. I mean, you're so square, you're cubic. I mean, whoa. So, you know, that could be, that might be a big insult at like the mathematics conferences.
As an aside, that is exactly the same of saying you're three-dimensional. Okay, that's equivalent.
Which is good, right? Because being one dimensional is a bad thing. So.
Right, exactly. Or you could take, are you trying to say I'm fat? Can you call me fat?
No.
I think I'm fat. I'm three-dimensional.
Two-dimensionally challenged.
My stomach sticks out. Is that what you're trying to say? You know, you can certainly find ways to.
Quoting one of my mathematics teachers, one of the cool things about mathematics is that circles are things that are sometimes round. and let's just go back. Depending on what this is actually a good point because it depends on how you define a metric or a distance.
Right, and this is exactly what it is.
Coming back, this is actually relevant. So
yeah,
going back to what cube means. So a small gripe I have is. Sometimes people think cube is interchangeable with custom limited environment.
Right. And while one can be another, that one is not a two-way street.
That's my opinion as well, but we'll just have to clarify as a community what means what, you know? You can learn with people's choices from cubes that are different from yours, but you have to give some context, right?
Right.
I think the sticking point is where you say, well, we need some finer sort of points of delineation between archetypes, well, not archetypes, but, you know, different formats, as you're saying. But I think people don't want to be told that your thing that you've built is not a cube. You know, not because people are saying we don't, it's good, but we want to call it something else, but because they feel like the work's being, saying it's less valid, if you see what I mean.
The magic community in general doesn't ever want to be incorrect. I don't know if you guys are aware of this.
I think everyone doesn't want to be incorrect.
No one has ever made a misplay in the history of magic. No one's ever lost a game of their own volition. No one, you know, magic players are never wrong. It's, you know, as a generalization, magic players are by nature very difficult to in handling any sort of constructive criticism.
We're all speculating geniuses and financial experts in every aspect of the stock market.
And game designers.
Legal experts and professional game designers as well.
Right, all wrapped into one, and you know, and all wrapped up alone in that 17-year-old body that's been playing Magic for 3 months. and you know, so when it comes down to it, you say, "Hey, why didn't you? You know, I think you would have been better doing this in your game instead of this." It's like, "Don't tell me what to do, old man." You know, like, okay, and that's kind of, you know, Magic players are that just like that in general. So of course, anytime we try to tell someone, well, yeah. That's why I like to say, so it's kind of like a cube, but it's this thing instead. Because, you know, we would like to have that word to mean something at least somewhat specific.
Yeah. But maybe,
so we can have a point of reference.
Maybe we can try to understand the current state of cube design so we can try to get some sense on exactly what word means what. So,
I guess the biggest division, like Anthony said earlier, is still unpowered. I think that remains the case.
No. I'm going deeper than that. The original thought that let's get Magic's best cards, put them in a box, and drafting out of it. Let's go really to the root. Okay. Mm-hmm. One misconception that I find that people have is, and going back to the list thingy, this is not to mean we'll just rank all magic cards and pick the top 360 or something. I think you can agree with me.
Absolutely.
there are some notions of balance.
That is a common misconception. You're absolutely correct.
There are some, I mean, the best cube, talking about powered and unpowered and stuff like that, and I don't run planeswalkers, and swords of X and Y are too powerful for an unpowered cube. That's a relatively recent discussion as well. I mean,
right. There's a lot of you're right. That is, there's a lot of now that everybody has their own cube, people are looking for ways to be exclusive instead of learning of ways to be inclusive.
Yeah, and one thing I find it very hard is sometimes things are not contradictions. I mean, yes, disenchant on a vacuum, it's a very narrow magic card. But if we want to, say, play with the most powerful magic cards in history, it kind of makes sense that we'd play with the more powerful answers, right?
Sure.
So that's why you cube with disenchant, with naturalize or some variant, with all the, I'm missing all the staples, but... I mean, it's just the point stands.
No, absolutely.
Disenchant is not in the best 360 cards, but you shape a format and then provide the necessary tools within it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And, well, it's, you know, you carve the statue, right? You carve the basic form, and then you have to work on the details. You know, here's the basic form. Here's our sports team. Here's our starting lineup, or here's our roster. All right. Now we have to make trades. We have to do whatever to try to get the best team possible.
Or with just the New York Yankees and we throw money at it.
Right. Something right. Well, that's a way to do it too. You know, let's get it. Let's get this person. We don't have this. Go buy it. You know, here we go. Like, let's get it in. Let's get it in here. And so, and that's exactly right. And there is certainly a lack of, and that goes back to your word, your context as well, right? So is it going to be for the most part, some of the most powerful cards? Well, sure. And I think that's okay. And then, however, you know, like I said, there's certainly going to be, there needs to be a nod towards, let's make this a fun thing to do. You know?
But fun is so subjective.
And fun is absolutely subjective, right? And that's, so that adds another decision tree, right? Like, let's try to make this experience what I want it to be for myself and my playgroup.
But that's the other thing. You remember a few minutes ago I said we're going to talk about banned cards in Cube?
Yes.
Yeah, this is the time. So,
all right.
If Cube started with as the list of the most powerful cards in Magic intended to be drafted, so just the fact, I mean, there are some discussion online that people say, I want a low power level for my cube, or these type of cards are OP and I don't want to come near them. How is that different than the initial discussion about powered versus unpowered cubes?
I mean, I don't know if it's significantly different. However, I think there's, for that, I think there's kind of a slippery slope type thing going on. And this is another discussion point, right? So, I don't know if you guys remember in the history of Magic, it was, talking about bannings in Legacy, or I think it was Extended basically, or Standard, where it was, there was a very famous phrase that was, ban everything until Necropotence is good again, and then ban Necropotence.
Yeah. The Black Summer in 97 or something.
Right, there was Combo Winter into, you know, all the Black Summer, Combo Winter, all that kind of stuff, and that kind of phrase emerged from that. And I think what we're seeing now is people want to ban things that are taking over games, that are taking over what their experience, quote unquote, ruining their experiences. But what happens inevitably is there always will be the best cards, right?
Yeah.
And no matter what you do, no matter what you trim down on, right, no matter how much you keep chopping off the top layers, there's always going to be cards that are at the top. And when do you decide that those cards on top are acceptable to be on top. You know,
yeah,
I think that's an interesting point. I don't have the answer to that.
Nice.
For me, it was, if we take away just the thinnest top layer, you know, because I play unpowered personally, for a variety of reasons, but one of which is I like vintage type games where a ton of stuff happens really early and things are decided one way or another, possibly earlier than usual. I like visiting vintage, but I don't like to live in vintage. Not saying Power Cube is vintage, because it's certainly significantly different. But I've certainly, for example, I like to say I can probably count the number of times I've lost playing turn one Sol Ring on one hand when my opponent didn't do the exact same thing.
One thing that's very – and thank you for saying that. Someone once asked Gavin Verhey from Wizards – If he preferred powered or unpowered cubes. His response was, when I draft unpowered cube, it's because I want to have an experience that's going to be pretty balanced and fun, where a wide range of decks are possible. Mm-hmm. When I draft powered cube, it's because I want to feel alive.
Right. I want to do powerful, swingy things, right? I want
that
to,
thrill.
Right, exactly. I want to be able, you know, I want that roller coaster ride of turn one, discard, 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 tinker away this thing on turn one. I'm the best magic player in the world. And they go, playing Swords to Plowshares. I am the worst magic player in the world. You know, that's what you'll get a lot of that. And often when I speak to people who play Power Cube, that's exactly what it is. The stories they tell are always, I remember the time when person did this ridiculous thing and I still won. Or I remember that time I did this ridiculous thing and my opponent didn't win. You know, or whatever it was, you know.
When you come back from that mind twister with a card left in hand or something. And
Exactly. Yeah. Or the... You know, like I said, or the turn one, you know, Blightsteel Colossus or, you know, whatever it might be. But you don't, of course, you know, you don't hear the stories of, oh, man, I had a great time, man. My opponent cast turn one Blightsteel Colossus. I played Jackalpuff and then I lost and we played the next game. That was awesome. you don't hear those stories as much, right? New players will give you that experience, right? New players who have never experienced vintage or experienced things like that will just be like, that was so cool. But if you played for a while, you're like, all right, come on. as long as everybody's got a shot to make something like that happen, you know,
it's about finding the sweet spot of what you're comfortable with.
Exactly. And, you know, catering to your play group, catering to all that. And for me, you know, the far is, you know, going back to let's ban these cards. I think there is I'll use a unit term universally, loosely, agreed cutoff point of like the powered cards and the unpowered cards.
Ah, okay.
But powered cards, I mean to also include things like Sol Ring, things like Library of Alexandria.
Yes.
You know, like oppressive one cards that can take over games.
Yeah, Umezawa's Jite.
Right, and that,
I mean,
that falls below the Mason-Dixon line.
That's a sort of the tier 1.1.
And the line gets murky.
Next one, right? When you take when you cut the top layer off, that's next layer of cards that rise to the top, right?
Like Recurring Nightmare.
Recurring Nightmare and Umezawa's Jite and Sword of Body and Mind, some people think, or, you know,
Jace
cards
Memory
like Jace 5. Right, Jace 5, and you know, the reason why I don't run Jace 5 is not because it's too powerful. The reason why I don't run Jace 5 is because it's too binary. It's either ridiculous and can't possibly be beat, or it does nothing and you die. Because there's certainly been times where it does both. And, you know, it's like, there are times where, like, you know, you go all in and you're like, all right, I'll draw a card. Spend 5 minutes, draw a card because I need an answer. Draw another card because I need an answer, I'm dead. So for me, that's why I removed it, is because there. However, if you could certainly put it in that group, right? Any of the repeatable mill tens are certainly not adjusted for inflation in a 40-card environment, you know. So there's that new group. The Jace the Mind Sculptor is kind of right up there too, you know, these cards that rise to the top. And then you could say, okay, well, I'm going to chop that layer off, right? I don't like playing with those cards. but then the Sword of Fire and Ices and the Batter Skulls and things like that. And that's the top layer, you know?
The balances and all the...
Exactly, and balances. You know, we could have a whole conversation about balance and how misunderstood that card is. But, yes. You know, there's a new Armageddon, right? Some people consider Armageddon...
That's deservedly up there.
You know, so, you know, let's cut those away. And then, well, if we cut those away, then we're also, as we start to chop these layers away, we're also changing what the archetypes have available to them to do. You know, I always found, going back to our white-black discussion, not the racial one about Baltimore, we're talking about the one about white-black. We're talking more about cleric tribal. Going back to that conversation, you know, I've always found the white weenie decks, the white black aggressive strategies, that white's main disruptive element is mana denial, mana disruption. You know, black has hand, has the proactive hand destruction. Blue has the reactive counter spells. Red has lots of removal. Usman and my last podcast, we talked a lot about green and how green is very limited on the disruption side of things, and that often why it suffers. But white's piece of that puzzle is the mana disruption, is the Talia's, and you know, not that it's mana disruption, the imposing sovereigns, the what's his name cards, the winter orbs and the tangle wires and Schadenfors. Even though those cards aren't white, the Armageddons, the Ravages, the Cataclysms, you know, that's its disruptive element. And I think when you start taking that stuff away, you're thereby weakening one of the things that this color combination can do well. And then you're going to see that ripple effect of, okay, well now white's bad. Okay, well now black's bad. Okay, well now we have to start making big sweeping changes. All the black creatures are now zombies. All the white creatures are now rebels. Like, that'll fix it. When it's just adding that top layer back in that will help to skew things, but you know,
we can actually provide a good example of this. For instance, you claim that signets are too powerful and that they take gameplay out of aggressive strategies, right? And then
go ahead, yes, continue.
No, it would. It's just another small jab at the Magic Online Cube. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We don't ever do any of that. It's cool. Usman never soapboxes about the Magic Online Cube. I promise. Never happens. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
No. It was just a small joke. But about the top layers, one thing that... And again, people are free to play at the power level they want. We have to figure a way of talking the same language. You can say... I want my games to be more like retail limited and not like vintage. And so I decided to exclude all of these powerful cards. Mm-hmm. And I can get behind that. I cannot get behind. My cube isn't powered. I cut Yumezawa's Jite and Trunim Nemesis because Trunim Nemesis is so uninteractive. But I'm cubing with Soul Ring and the Conspiracies and Double Stroke.
Mm-hmm.
The misplacement of power level, you know?
Sure.
It really bugs
inconsistency.
Me.
Inconsistency.
Yeah, because some cards just scale with the power level of the cards around them. Like, say, Liliana of the Veil is a good example.
Yeah, Mind Twist as well. Mind Twist in it.
Mind Twist is a huge one, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like in my own example where we've got what I've tried to term semi-powered, where we've got all the obnoxious power balance, land tax and ancestral recall and time walk and all those things, but we're not running the really, really fast mana, the Moxen and Sol Ring and mana crypts and stuff like that. In that sort of environment, it's a lot more fair. But Lynn, the Island of the Veil is another example, I suppose, as well.
My point is that I truly believe that a good cube has a good system of checks and balances. We've discussed this multiple times. Most of the times, the really powerful cards are the answer to the other really powerful cards, and you have this intricate balance.
Yeah,
where you have this ecosystem set up of predators and prey.
Exactly.
And what goes on in between them. You know, of course, your swords are going to be oppressive if you go down the list and you're not playing any of the for lack of orangutans, right? That you're not playing any way to deal with artifacts. Well, of course, then artifacts are going to be really difficult to deal with. You know, there certainly has to be an ecosystem set up of the checks and balances, the prey and predators to help keep things in line, right? That's always to draw a parallel to Constructed. That's always was said about Force of Will and Legacy, right? It was often said that it's the glue that holds the format together. Because without it, you're going to see, at one point, you're going to see just an explosion of the combo decks, and that's going to be it. If some of the decks don't have a way to interact with it from a low or no mana standpoint. However, you may hear those same people argue that that's the reason why the blue decks are always best, because they get to play offense and defense at the same time without having to use mana. So, you know, you can spin the info whichever way, but what it comes down to is that the formats are really only truly healthy when you have that circle of life. The circle of life of, you know, yep. I'm currently holding a Magic card, a Savannah Lion above my head. And
nice.
Oh, you know, whatever it is of that, you know, the, you know, the lions eat the hyenas, who, you know, then die and feed the plants, and they and the animal, and or you know, then the zebras eat the plants, and the lions eat the zebras, and yep. the plants eat the lions when they die, and you know, there has to be that kind of thing set up in there, and truly, and you know, it's as much, you know, we can talk about Magic all the time, right? We can talk about Cube as much as we want. We can theorize. We can talk about, okay, if I had to get an absolute list of absolute staples, right, of what has to be in a cube. If you want a traditional cube, this is what it is. But it's still not going to be what you want it to be until you get to run laps with it and work through it and see what the predator is and the prey. And you'll see right away who the alphas are, you know. You'll see the cards that are consistently winning. You'll see the cards that are consistently unable to be answered, who are the alpha predators, you know. And then that's when you say, okay, well, maybe it's time to, you know, add some kudzu, not the card kudzu, but like some kudzu into the ecosystem to try to kill the mold or whatever it might be. But then the kudzu may take over, you know, and now it's, we got to find a way to get rid of the kudzu. So, you yeah. know, to work itself back around.
I see. It's two groups of cards we talked about, the swords, and we talked about naturalizing disenchant. And if the swords are sort of wrecking face regularly, the very best things you can do is throw an instant speed artifact destruction.
Right, right. Smash
turns that equipment into a massive blowout.
People for having it, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, for every problem permanent, if you add answers, we find that's probably the best way to balance our cube.
Right. And for me, I found that I've hit I don't know, maybe I'm living in an illusionary world, but I actually, you know, in full disclosure, I don't run any naturalize or any of those spells in my cube, but I run as many come into play creatures that have those types of abilities as I can to use that as a check, because I don't play in my cube. I don't play with sideboarding.
Okay.
So I don't want cards that are going to be virtual mullions. So, you know, if you just happen to play against someone and you're, you know, sitting with a naturalize in your hand and your opponent is turn one dude, turn two dude, turn three dude, turn four dude, turn five burn your face, turn six to discard. You're just like, well, glad I mulled the six the entire time, you know, whereas an Otabi orangutan can at least get in there and block, or can at least get in there and start attacking, you know. Yeah. So, and I don't, you know, so I don't run very many of those cards, and I try to keep the format away from needing those cards.
No, but
and I'm okay with cards being very yeah. good. I'm okay with cards being very, very good, but I'm not okay with cards being providing a binary experience like
as a counterpoint to that, if I may, I think, you know, I don't often see a naturalized or disenchant sit in hand for the whole game, you know, any more so than I do an expensive creature and hit, you know, just get killed before I hit six or seven or eight mana. Mm-hmm. You know, from that point of view, and we've recently gone away a bit from having is our artifact disruption ETB creature, you know, orangutan, sex monkeys, Viridian Elf, Reclamation Sage, and all this stuff. So we've actually gone a bit more towards having the instant speed to provide a bit more in terms of people talking about combat tricks, sure. ways to deal with equipment, stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for the 187 creatures as well. But, you know, there's other ways of looking at it.
No, certainly. And you know, and that's one thing is I wrote an article about it, not, I don't know, in the past couple of years about how combat treks are almost all but extinct. It is, yeah. You want to talk about predators and prey.
Yeah, it's very, very, yeah. Very much in my mind when I did that.
The quality of removal is so good and so invasive, pervasive, I guess is a better word. Invasive sounds a little negative. Pervasive across most of the colors that giant growth is not worth a card very much anymore. Often it's just a reason to get 2-for-1. Same thing with a lot of auras. You know, it's just a way to get 2-for-1 because of the removal. So really only the tough will survive. You know, we're talking Vines of Vastwood that can double as a counterspell. You know, things of that nature really only make it. So I can certainly see your point of having those types of spells in there as that second layer of combat tricks.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to attack with this guy because they can't block it. Well, sword's gone. Well, creature's gone. Well, that sucked. You know.
Yeah.
I dig that for sure.
Yeah, things like vines are another option there, and sort of I suppose mutagenic growth. You can make a case for that. I'm currently trying that out. Being free as well.
Sure.
Essentially, so you know, there are some combat tricks that can be played, but no, I'm largely agree with that sentiment that there aren't really enough of them, and it's something we could do a bit more of. It's one of the directions I'd like to see the format to go. Going back to your earlier point about things being a bit more towards creatures, sort of smashing face and interacting in combat. That's as the quality sort of increases on that front, and we get more to pick through. You think, in all likelihood, that's something we'll see a bit more of in the cube as well. So if we can reinforce the excitement of combat with more tricks, and that's something I'm personally all for that.
But you see that's we're sort of back to talking about context, you know? People talk about combat tricks because when they play limited, combat tricks are a good thing. And it's just an artifact, no pun intended, of the environment. In retail limited, combat tricks are good. In cube, not necessarily, due to the context of all the other cards you play.
That's what I mean. I think people would like them to be good because they are currently in a pretty bad, sad state of affairs.
Yeah, but this brings me to another topic.
we've had a few.
One we wanted to talk about. If you need to choose between making Giant Growth good or making Jace the Mind Sculptor fair, which one do you choose?
Yeah, that's a fair question.
Personally, I try to make Jace the Mind Sculptor fair. I've 1-2'd with Jace the Mind Sculptor, True Name Nemesis, Phantasmal Image, Force of Will, and all the other powerful stuff in my cube. The thing about context, what am I getting? If some archetypes naturally arise from the card pool you are considering, if you're playing a powered cube, you're likely going to play with Black Lotus and Soul Ring and all the Moxes. So it's more likely that you have archetypes that are artifact-based, so Tolarian Academy is good, Tinker is good, Goblin Welder can be good, and so this also ramps you, so creatures with high mana costs are suddenly playable, and you can give more redundancy by considering other powerful cards like Reanimate and Tinker and Natural Order and Show and Tell and so on. Would you call this a top-down approach or a bottom-up approach? Because I want to talk about the other one. Doesn't really matter, but... Okay, let me get to the point. Usually, right. we arrive at the archetypes arise naturally from the card pool we are considering. Okay, we can make some small adjustments to push slightly more in one direction or the other. One thing that I know some people do, but personally I don't know if it's the more efficient way, is I want my blue-white archetype to be blue-white heroic.
Mm-hmm.
Say, for instance.
Okay.
And I want my blue-red archetype to be... whatever.
Spells matter?
No, this actually has synergy. But the point I'm trying to... make is sometimes people say, I want to have these archetypes viable. But then what happens is the card pool is not really there.
Oh, okay, I get where you're going with this, right.
To support yeah. those archetypes. And then, again, either you put a lot of really, say, suboptimal cards in your cube because you really want your white-black archetype to be cleric tribal, so you play yeah, a lot of clerics and Shadowborn Apostles and stuff like that. And this is not exactly the best way to have an healthy and balanced cube environment. Do you know any counterexample? Because I'm sure there exist.
Well, I can provide a similar example, and then we can probably go from there.
Okay.
What you see, you hear this a lot. The kind of thing here that reminds me a lot of the conversations I have about aggressive decks in Cube.
Yeah.
That people say, my aggressive decks don't work. Why is it that they don't work? My aggressive decks stink, so therefore I'm going to not include any of, you know, I'm not going to, I'm going to change it, right? So my aggressive decks don't work, so I'm going to add more mid-range cards or whatever. I'm going to do whatever because I give up on aggro. But when you look at the original aggro lists, they have 2 1-drops in each color. Of the aggressive colors, you know, it's like Jackalpup Goblin Guide. The end. And it's like, okay, well, let's take a look at the reasons why it's not working. Because then they'll say, well, the aggro decks aren't very good, so I'm just going to give up on it. We're going to play big creatures. And then the very next statement that comes out is, my control decks are absolutely ruining, you know, the format. Or every time, blue's unfair. I have to cut the blue cards because blue decks always win in my cube. Because once again, going back, there's no natural predator, right? The metagame clock, you know, aggro, you know, the aggro mid-range control kind of way that works. You know, the aggro beats control, the control beats the mid-range, and mid-range beats the aggro decks. You kind of have to keep that wheel turning.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance for those.
Absolutely. And so I hear that kind of thinking a lot of, I don't understand, I want to make aggro work, but I'm not willing to commit enough to it to get it to work. I want my blue-white heroic deck to be good, so I'm going to put all these cards in, but now it never wins because all the other, you know, because all these other decks are better because they just have, like, better cards in them rather than having to play, you know, Ordeal of Thassa and Ordeal of Heliod and, you know, whatever it might be, and Hero of Iroas or, you know, all these creatures. And it's like, well, I keep losing to, like, the black-red aggressive deck. He just keeps playing guys and killing my things, you know? So it's a very similar point. And that's that top-down thinking, right? It's like we want this, so now we're going to fill it in, as opposed to the bottom-up of, okay, well, we're going to let's kind of put some of this here, some of these cards here, and some of these cards here, and watch how they interact to then give rise to new things to do. Like, oh, cool, with all these cards that we put here and all these cards we put here, this formed the blue-red spell. You know, spells matter. Okay, well, that's a kind of a fun deck. Maybe I'll sprinkle in a little more support for that, or I'll do a little bit of this. And I think most of us as cube designers often just did the... And you know, I hate if I'm using these terms incorrectly. At least this is my kind of perception of it. But, you know, the top-down approach, a lot of times, you know, is often we run into problems because we want to have one specific thing and we're trying to go stepwise downward into it to make it work, and we realize that it's not jiving with what's going on. So fortunately with Cube, one of the reasons why we're able to have, you know, 7 different podcasts about it and there's always more to say is that it's a mix, really, of both that make it work. You know, I know that seems like a sucker answer, but it is really true. There's some amount of top-down that you have to do of saying, these are the cards I like to play and I want to play, and by I mean, like, the royal I, like me and my play group. You know, of these are the kinds of things we like to do, so let's include them. But then we have to come at it from the other angle of, let's make it work to where the cards that we want to play are actually playing the way we want them to and competitive. You know what I mean? And fit our definition of the word fun.
But that's an amazing point and brings me to another topic. Say you want Blue White Heroic to work. One could argue that you just make all your cube removal be sorcery speed. Right?
Okay. That's certainly a way you could do it in order to try to support, right, that archetype.
Yeah, but then what happens to the rest of your cube when you make all your removal sorcery speed?
What happens to your cube? You run Prophet of Crew Fix.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. So every change is like is dominoes.
Right, Teferi becomes really, really powerful.
Yeah.
Of being able to play spells on your opponent's turn as well, you know. And breaks the, you know, breaking the rules of things. So, right, it creates new problems, right? It's the, and you see this happen, you know, in nature. Georgia, where I'm living now here in the States, from what I've heard told, I'm not, you know, can't speak to this 100% accuracy, is that they were having some sort of ecological problem with, I don't know if it was tree mold or a certain kind of plants. So they decided to do what the Japanese did and introduce kudzu into the environment.
Nah.
The problem is that the winters don't get cold enough here to kill the kudzu. So the kudzu now has taken over entire large patches of forest. There's just kudzu on everything, and you can't get rid of it. So, you know, it causes another problem. You see this, you're starting to see this some ecological, right? Like people have exotic fish and they just dump them in the river or whatever, and it causes rise to a new, you know, breed of something that then causes problems across the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's the same thing for cube. It's like, well, I'm going to change this. And you're, by all means, go ahead and make all your, you know, go ahead and make all your removal sorcery speed. That's awesome. But just be prepared that it's going to have much further reaching implications than making your blue-white heroic deck good. And even then, might not even make it good. Are you playing, you know, cards like God's Willing? Because unless you're playing ways to protect it, they'll just be like, okay, untap, vindicate it. Okay. I guess I have to start over.
Okay, and, so you probably... So then it's possible you fall on that downward spiral we were talking about?
Absolutely.
Where we just, okay, so Vindicate is too good, so now these creatures are too good, and where does it end, right?
Exactly, it's this slippery slope.
Okay, let me ask you another question about the other way to try to solve that problem, about the archetypes, about choosing your archetypes.
Okay.
So, I've noticed that my red-green mid-range decks are not performing correctly.
Okay.
So let me try to take some inspiration of Constructed, and let me try Birthing Pod. Mm-hmm. But I don't really... It's not really working. Maybe I should go up to 4 copies of Birthing Pod.
Right. Right, because that's the only way to make it work, right? Is I need to be able to consistently draw the engine. Or draft the engine. Find it. And this is, you know, that's a similar problem that I had with the mono black swamps matter archetype,
mm-hmm.
black mana archetype, is, and I tried to run that for years to get it to work, is that unless you were rotisserie drafting, you would get all these, you would kind of get some good black cards and then see some of the black mana matters cards and kind of say, all right, commit to it. And then what happens? The Cabal Coffers and the Urborg didn't get opened. Or the other colors, the other decks are dipping into your black removal, and I'm left with a awful black mid-range deck because there weren't enough copies, or the copies weren't opened of the engine that makes this car go. So, well, what's the solution to that? Well, I can readjust my expectations and make black do something else, or we should have four Urborgs.
No. It's obviously the, no. That's actually a fine question. Maybe we can just try to put all the utility lands apart and rotisserie draft them after the regular draft.
Mm.
Would that work?
I guess you're right. Where, I mean, once again, it would work. We're adding a layer of complexity on top of everything. We're deviating a little further and making it a little more difficult for people to participate, I think.
Okay.
I'm inserting my own opinion here. Is that an answer? Certainly it is an answer.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's not just an opinion. It's of you are objectively adding another layer of complexity.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe that's a step too far. You know, I can't imagine being a new player. I mean, Magic is hard. Newsflash. Yeah.
Especially Cube with all the mechanics and.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's hard for those of us who know what all the cards do and know what all the abilities do. It's still very hard. Now add that to someone who maybe doesn't know everything, who is not as old or hasn't done it as much. And now you're adding another layer of complexity. How many layers do you have to go? How long does it take until the person says, I'm just going to go play Tiny Leaders instead, because I already have a deck made for that. I'm just going to go draft, you know, cards that I know what they do. When is that point? Here's a hint. It doesn't take that much for people to throw their hands up and be like, I don't want to deal with this. You really have to have that with those committed individual play group people who are willing to do it all the time. It's, you know, it's the people who, you know, well, I have all the money in the world, so I need to start, you know, I need to find a new way to get my thrills, right? Jumping off of mountains isn't enough, so now I have to do it while riding a camel wearing a parachute, and the object is to land it on a bullseye. You know what I mean? Like, you keep adding layers of, this is how I have to get my thrill, and now I have to do it the whole time after taking, you know, a large dose of NyQuil and some 30-year-old Quaaludes on top of wearing a blindfold and having headphones on playing, you know, Pachelbel and G, you know, to see if I can still concentrate well, or, whatever it might be, to then get that thrill, right, to get that next layer, you know, to get that next, I would, to quote the 80s song, I want a new drug, you know, what's the next thing? So if that's where you've arrived, then add those layers of complexity, add those sorts of things. But just realize for every action for every reaction there is a reaction.
Repercussions, I guess.
That's right. And for every action there is a reaction, right? By doing this, you make this better, but you make this worse.
And it could be with the sort of black devotion, sort of heavy black, the only way to really make that work is to add the next layer and add the land draft, add the multiple copies of supporting cards and dark rituals and whatever. But that's when you got to ask the question in your group, are you willing to do that? Or do you want to say, maybe we can't make this work? You know, so that's where it comes down to each group's preference, I suppose.
No, but that's actually a pretty interesting question, because as I see it, there are two different factors that arise out of that. The first one is, okay, so where exactly do we draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
Or even should we draw a line? Or what is cube and what is not? Because look at this, and this is the second thing. If cube started as a way to play all the best and more powerful cards in cube in the same setting, so people are just really looking for that thrill, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Can we really and consciously argue that since it's all about the hypothetically, if this is all about the quest for that thrill, is it still cube as long as we're looking for that thrill? You see what I'm getting?
I mean, I.
No, because, okay, so, I really want to feel alive, like Gavin Verhey said when they asked him. So, I want Black Lotus, and Mind Twist, and Turn 1 Tinker for Blightsteel Colossus, or Turn 1 Channel for Emrakul. Or, no, I really want this environment to show that I'm a brilliant and genius cube designer, so I'll just run 4 birthing pods, and we will draft all the lands afterwards, and I will sharpie on my guild gates so we can have efficient mana fixing, and what is the difference?
Right, and that aligns.
This is an honest question.
And of course, and that the unfortunately the honest answer is that it's arbitrary, but for me, and I think it is to the benefit of the wider community moving on, is that the should probably be drawn somewhere at the bare bones. Because what you're doing when, in my opinion, what you're doing when you're adding four copies of things to make things go is you're simulating constructed. And simulating constructed was, I don't think, ever the idea of cube drafting in its infancy as it's developed. I think that's a different thing. That is your custom draft environment. Is that like the Innistrad cube, right? Or the Innistrad, you know, format where we have four of these, three of these. The object is to simulate another format. Those should be draft simulators, cube, you know, format simulators, you know. Here's our, you know, and, you know, we talk about simulators all the time, right? We have driving simulators, flight simulators. Why don't we call that a constructed simulator? You know what I mean? Well, what constructed? Well, this is going to simulate whatever. That's, you know, 1997 extended format simulator or, you know, whatever it might be. Or let's have, you know, this is my combo winter, you know, one. And you have, you know, all your Talarian Academies and all your Necros and all your, you know what I mean? And have all that and one thing and have that be something you can draft and then your decks resemble what a constructed tournament was at that time. So, you know, then that draws us all the way back to the, you know, where do you draw the line in the sand, the slippery slope arguments. And I really think, in my opinion, of course, you know, with the disclaimer of everybody's allowed to do what they want in the privacy of their own homes and enjoy it. Fine.
As long as they're consenting adults in the full possession of their mental capabilities.
That's right. That's right. And with Magic players, that last portion could, of course, be up for debate at any point. However, you know, not excluding us as we talk about this. Either.
Obviously, yes.
But you know, people can do whatever they want, but the problem is you can't, you know, you don't get to change a bunch of things, and then, you know, you can't say, for example, I learned how to play the trombone, and then say, all right, great, well, come out and play for me. And when you come out and play it, you're doing something, oh, well, I only had this part to it, and so I play it this way. But it's got the pieces of a trombone, so I'm playing trombone. It's like, well maybe that's playing with the trombone, but it's not what the traditional definition of it is. And I'd like to have that traditional definition from which we can depart. And for me, that traditional, you know, to restate it again, is that singleton format and the in cards included play towards the title of what it is. And you know, we can go from there. Otherwise, you're looking at, they're different things. They're custom draft formats. There are simulators. They're constructed simulators. They're limited simulators, right? People have, you know, Rise of the Eldrazi cubes. I did air quotes while you guys, you know, weren't looking. You know, that simulate that draft environment. You know, draft simulators, constructed simulators, whatever they might be. Custom draft environments. But it, man, are we so much better served by having a starting point. And, you know, and that's the thing. People are allowed to do whatever they want. I am not here to tell you that you are incorrect. Just realize that if you do what your departure, if you come to me and ask me or want to have a conversation with me about cube, our definitions have to line up in order for me to have any sort of good feedback or discussion about it. We have to have the same expectations, that same context. And we're getting further and further away from that, you know, as we keep trying to change the definition of it. And it, man, would it be great if we could all speak the same language, as it were, and call it capital C cube.
But playing Devil's Advocate one last time.
Please, by all means.
You could just argue that, so, it's not, I assume it's not our area of expertise, but so how do you reconcile EDH or Commander as it was dreamed by Sheldon Mannery and all the people in his playgroup with the way that people just want to play it nowadays, where it's sometimes more like vintage singleton with 99 cards, a different ban list, and a special rule for the 100th card?
Only through the fact that I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. I don't have a whole lot of. I am not a multiplayer Magic person.
Yeah.
I freely admit this. I've tried. It's so hard for me. I can't deal with the waiting. I can't focus on trying to deal with three opponents at once. I'm too much of a spiky person to be able to try to somehow both attack and defend at the same time, three different people. And that political things, if they decide that I should be out of the game, that I have no control over that without doing something really oppressive. I am in competitive games. It's hard for me to reconcile the gentleman's agreement because I don't know what that means. You know, the gentleman's agreement to do what? To let all of us sit around and dirtle and that there's a minimum number of turns we have to take. So please, can you just give me the small version of his original intent versus what you perceive it to be now? So I'll be more than happy with my opinion.
As I understand, Commander was originally envisioned to be a multiplayer experience where players could play with all the cool and awesome cards that did not see play in Standard or Type 1 at the time as well. Okay. So they built higher life totals so that all the verdant forces in the world could see play.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. As I understand it, that's the original intent. And if you go read Sheldon Mannery's articles, that's his vision for the format. I can try to link one or two of his articles in his column.
I didn't know if it was something different than what I had imagined, but that's very similar to my Type 4 reasoning of, hey, let's play with these cards that we were never able to play with.
So this is, as I understand it, the origin of the format. But nowadays, if you say to people, I want to play Commander, there are people who will have their own gentleman's agreement, like you said. There are if you go to a major tournament, a GP, Star City Games Open, to Gen Con, you'll see these Commander tournaments, and now I'm making the air quotes, because I think it's an oxymoron. But
yeah, a little
again,
bit.
Just my opinion. And you see people for... Okay, so I'm going to use a very strong metaphor, so this is probably PG-13 at least.
All right, hold on. Give me a second. I'm going to hold on to my seat. All right, go ahead.
No, it's just...
I'm secured. I'm good. Go.
For some
I'm still holding on. Go, go,
for,
go.
For some people, Commander is... Let me spend 3 hours having fun with my friends while we talk about life, play awesome cards and drink some beers. And to some people is, let's try to masturbate to see who comes first. Okay. But.
So I guess it'll be a square jerk then if there's four people, unless you're sitting at a round table.
Yeah.
Then circle. But then again,
than a cube jerk, which is what we've been doing for the last 2.5 hours.
Right, exactly. But then again, you know, not all circles are round. So, you know, it could still be a square jerk, even though we're at a round table. Sorry.
Okay. But the thing is, so you have, but these, both these groups, and again, I'm majorly stereotyping things.
Sure.
But these two different groups of people say, let's play a game of Commander, or let's play a game of EDH. Mm-hmm. And, yes. One group will argue that, okay, this is the way that the format was originally intended to be played. And the other one will say, look, these are the rules. We're playing within the rules. I don't care about original intent. Like I said, if you go by what I perceive to be Sheldon's idea for the origin, the purpose of the format, EDH tournament is an oxymoron.
Right.
Yeah. I think the EDH in this case is diverged from, you know, that original intent far, far more than Cube even has yet, you know, because you've got those old fun multiplayer big creature decks, and then you've got incredibly spiky competitive 1v1 decks designed to combat on turn 2.
No, but even, I'm not even going into 1v1 and
French
lists.
No, but that's what I'm saying. You know, this is an extra thing on top of your point. The difference is so vast now.
But the thing is, and I followed that scene for a while, so people, and the more mainstream thing I would guess in stores across the world or across tournament halls, across large events is people have an understanding that we have 20 different people with 20 different archetypes of people using the same word to define the same thing. And who are we to say that the original way and the way, like, the format was meant to be intended to be played, who are we to say this is the correct?
I have your answer, or I have my answer. I think the difference is that the rules being held to, the rules of construction, the rules of the things that are not opinion, the things that are fact.
Yeah.
Singleton environment, 100 cards, 99 of them in your deck, one is your commander, casting it from the exile zone, doing all these sorts of things. All of those things still exist. If I say to somebody, would you like to play some commander / EDH? I have that expectation that the expectation is that the rules are going to be the same. It's going to be 100 cards. It's going to be this. It's going to be this. If I want to then ask the next layer of questions, casual or competitive? Do we want to, what is your definition of winning? Is it winning because you're defeating your opponent, or is it winning because you're doing cool stuff, right? And then winning is an afterside of whoever does the coolest thing, right? That, which is, if you notice, like, EDH leagues often have, like, point totals, and the point totals aren't always, you know, while you get points for eliminating, you know, being the last one left in your pod, they're often cool things, point totals, right?
Yeah.
Have all five types of lands in play. Have all five colors of creature in play, right? So that is, so your winning, your definition of winning then changes. Is winning doing cool stuff, or is winning defeating your opponents? However, they all go back to that same origin point of 100 cards, single pin environment, doing whatever. Now they have their, you know, their banned list. And I think the banned list is basically there to try to limit the amount of ridiculous competitiveness or things that they feel break the balance, kind of like,
not,
you know.
But that's the thing. Not necessarily. The people in the rules committee for Commander specifically stated this is a suggestion. This is a way to try to – no. The thing is, first and foremost – get in an agreement with your play group.
Right. What are we doing?
And but you know, things like ad nauseum are legal, okay? And people have clamored for it to be banned, and they just said, "Look, it's legal because we have a gentleman's agreement and we have a social contract." Mm-hmm. And that works when you're talking about social contracts. It does not work when you go to a tournament, you know?
Right. So, tournament being the thing, right? And that's your defining line, right? By saying the word tournament, I think what is implied is that the definition of winning is defeating all your opponents.
Okay.
Is then that's your expectation. Once again, that's the definition, right? You know, going back to our meanings of words. I hear tournament and I immediately think of a competition between multiple entities in which at the end there will be one left victorious.
Okay.
Right? That's kind of definition of tournament. So as soon as you say to me EDH tournament, my mind goes to blink, no social contract. The object is to defeat your opponents. So I think that's kind of built into the language as opposed to, hey, let's get together and play some EDH. I rarely have met, and you know, and this is, I could be speaking out, you know, my butt. However, I've rarely met, if ever, met a player who plays EDH that does not have multiple decks. Often one that's a little more spiky or more spiky or less spiky to be able to, if they really enjoy playing, to be able to kind of take part in any sort of game. You know, one that's more tribal based and one that's, you know, a little more dirtly as the case may be. I've never met an EDH player that's like, oh man, I only have one deck. and this is what I'm going to play. Once you're in, you know, like foiling your cards in your cube. Once a few of them are shiny, need more shinies. Once I have one deck, gotta have more decks. You know, I like these three colors, but I kind of want to play this color too. I guess I better build another deck. You know, so you can get that variation there. But so I think the language helps clear up the social context.
Okay, and so but they have their own rules committee. Would you guys think there is a? I'm not going to say a need, but what would you say if someone came to you, and it's not going to be me, with the idea that let's have a cube rules committee? Because like you said, in Commander, at the very least, there's a rules committee, and the core, the essence of the rules is clearly stated. We don't have that with cube so clearly.
I would say absolutely not, really. I mean, I guess with EDH, the rules committee is setting out the framework and the basic, you know, skeleton of how to build a deck. What you do within the deck is decided by social contract with your group, right? As Anthony has explained. I think with the cube, it's something that the entire thing is constructed and the framework can change. And that's based on what your group wants to do. And I think to try and even to attempt to actually force people into a certain framework and way of building the cube would be fruitless anyway.
Well, I think it's already happening, but I think you guys are, there's not a grand committee. Every person who builds the cube is their own rules committee because they're the ones who are deciding what cards are in it and what cards are not. They're the ones who are setting it. So it exists, but it's at the micro level. There's not a macro level to be had. I mean, you could certainly, I always thought, you know, it'd be neat to kind of have, you know, at Gen Con to do some sort of like broadcast cube panel where you can have like different people who, you know, talk a lot about cube and know a lot about cube, and people could come up and ask questions, and people who've done it for a long time to give their opinion and create some discussion and do things like that. But I think at the macro level, it doesn't work because we already have every single person who builds their own and owns one is already doing that. Because when you're a cube designer, you control the format. You're the one who is saying what cards are banned. And by when I say banned, I mean not in your cube. And basically, in my cube, shock is banned. Why? Because it's not good enough, because I don't want to play with it. So effectively, that card is banned from my cube because it's not included. You know, and so you do it yourself. You can't have someone say it to other people that thou shalt not include this card in your cube because people, you know, either have already banned it or it's not banned. It's in their own cube. And that's the difference between EDH and cube, is that in cube, you control the cards that are in the format. In EDH, out in the wild, who knows what you're going to play against, right? From person to person, store to store, or deck to deck. I mean, it's just, you know, it's the wild, wild west out there as far as what you're going to play against, which is why they try to have this, you know, pseudo governing body that can say, hey, if you would like, here's a place you can come to and we can all agree on a unifying theory that'll help us communicate with each other.
Okay.
And within that format. And, you know, with cube, the only, I think, unifying theory, you know, this goes, once again, keeps feeding right back into that language and into that definition stuff of, here is our, you know, this is the thing, this is the place where we can meet and agree to then diverge and have a place where we can then build our lists, compare and contrast, find out which card's a 9 and which card's a 3 and which, you know, which card we want to marry and which card we want to, you know, just, you know, spend the one night with, sleeved or double sleeved or unsleeved. You know, whatever.
Come on.
So,
come on.
That's the point. That's exactly why we're talking about sleeving. We don't want to do that with the expensive parts.
Public service public service announcement by MTG 3D. If you take a nice cube card out, double sleeve yours. There are lots of card diseases out there. It's considerate of you and everyone else to double sleeve.
Right, this is going to be our first ever PG-13 MTG in 3D $100 cost, I think.
I have no idea.
I have no complaints. I have no regrets.
So that's my opinion on it, is while it's nice, I think there can be, you know, and that's what we're having, right? That's why we do shows like this. That's why there are articles written, so that there is a place that people who seek knowledge can go to find knowledge from sources. But I don't think a central governing body of any sort would work for this environment, because it's already taken care of by the designer.
Well, there we have it.
That's my TLDR version.
Yeah.
Yep. So
I gotta agree with that.
It's just talking about double sleeving again. It's just a matter of people, as long as people are consenting adults with their full mental skills, they can just do whatever they want, as long as they talk to each other, right?
Right, exactly. Whatever you do in the comfort of your own home, but, you know, you can come out and, you know, if you'd like to come out and have a discussion about it, let's find some common ground so then we can then talk about the differences.
Yeah.
Okay, there you like, have
that's
it.
That's a very deep message. You know, that goes for anything. Let me, I think that deserves a, you know, a self-satisfied sniff. That goes for anything in life. Go ahead, and, you know, we got to find some common ground before we can then discuss and come to terms with our differences. So,
yeah, there you have it. So, this was a long episode, and I think it's
shocking. Once again, shocking that I'm on here, and
we saw that coming.
Yeah, so I think it's a good time to wrap this up. So, Anthony, If everyone else listening wants to know, to hear more about your opinions and your views about Cube and life in general, where can they find you?
All right. You can find me. I'm on Twitter. I'm at Antnee42. That's A-N-T-K-N-E-E, 42. Because the origin of the, for those in the know or those who possibly are wondering, growing up in the Italian neighborhood where I did, in Philadelphia, no one could say three-syllable words, really. So it was never Anthony. It was, hey, yo, Anthony. So it's Anthony. And 42, of course, is a reference to the meaning of life, universe, and everything from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So Anthony42 on Twitter. Of course, you can go find the Third Power podcast. That's the podcast, Cube podcast I've been doing for a number of years now with my co-host Usman Jamil. We talk about Cube, we talk about Cube adjacent things, we talk about adjacent Cube things, and, adjacent Cube things as well. You can come and listen to us. You can find us on MTGcast or on iTunes. I currently write for, legitmtg.com. I haven't written an article in a little while, but I'm getting some ideas, and hopefully with the summer coming and school getting out, I'll be able to follow up on those, including a video or two about my Cube and the history and things like that. So you can find me there as well. I do share a blog as well with Usman at idratherbecubing.wordpress.com. And from there you can find my archived writings from other places I've written, like Star City and Quiet Speculation and things like that. So please come by, say hello. I love talking about Cube on Twitter. It's a once I figured out how to do it. Because I remember one of my earlier podcasts, I'm like, Usman, I don't understand Twitter. I'm old. Like, why am I only seeing like half of the conversation? I have no idea of context and what's going on. It's like, oh, well, you got to be able to follow everybody and know what's going on. And I'm still trying to learn Reddit. But if I ever get on Reddit, I'm basically Anthony42 everywhere. You can find me if you see that username on MTG Salvation, if you see it on Riptide Lab. If you see it wherever, you know, unless somebody's impersonating me, that'll be me. So come and find me. Let's talk. Let's chat. If you notice, I really hate talking and I really hate communicating. So, you know.
Yeah. We'll make sure all of that information is linked in our show notes as well. And as always, you can find us at MTGin3D on Twitter, where we also have our online presence in the MTG Salvation Cube forums, in Reddit, and again, if you can manage to contact us by smoke signals, we'll make the best of our ability to communicate back. Whew. So I guess this is a wrap then. Well, so it was a pleasure talking to you guys about this.
Thank you so much for having
joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I thought I had a great time. It was a lot of fun. You know, I still got to get a couple of tangents in, a little bit, got a self-satisfied sniff in there, squeezed one in right at the end. All in all, it was a good day, you know, and I love talking to you guys, and I hope in the future we can find some time
to do that Gen Con convention, right?
To do that Gen Con convention, or at least have you guys, you know, do maybe some sort of joint venture between Third Power, maybe have you guys on as a guest once, you know, to talk about some stuff. And I think that's the one thing I found, even with all the disagreements we have, for the vast majority of Q people, we're all on the same team, and we all support it. And that the more people out there who are talking about it, writing about it, the better. You know, great friends with Cranny and the Joy of Cubing people. You know, you guys, the Magic Box people. You know, we're same team, Team Cube, Go Cube. So thank you guys so much, and I really
Sounds
appreciate
great.
The opportunity to talk to you guys. And like I said, and it's exciting for an old man like me to be able to talk to across the pond and talk to some guys about the same thing we're doing here. You know, that's cool.
Yeah. Has that been a first for you, I guess, to do a co-host for the European podcast?
Yeah, I've never done a European podcast before. This is the first one. You know, I've done some, you know, I think I've done one that maybe has touched Canada, but never never across the pond. So this is a first for me, and an honor and a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, likewise.
We're spreading the word of Cube across the world slowly.
That's right. We're going to spread the word. Upheaval is good. If you find someone that says upheaval isn't good, please give them my information. I will talk to them personally. I'm the champion of upheaval. That is, you know, if I had to have a subtitle, you know, protector and champion of upheaval. So,
yeah, I don't need any convincing on that front.
Yep. So.
That's good. That's good because, you know, the podcast is long enough already, you know. I don't need to talk about upheaval. Yeah. I've said too much.
Okay, so I guess this is a good wrap. So see you all in next time.
Hey guys, it's been a pleasure. So see you next time, and happy cubing.